This is the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5. Speak your mind. Speak your mind.
We head to one of the discussions that we've been having for a while as a nation because of some of the things that we see, some of these stories, the unfortunate cases that are blazoned on the front pages. We talk about them for a while. We're upset as a nation. We ask what's done, and then we move on until the next victim grabs the front pages and the headlines once again. With me this morning, two people who definitely going to shed some light on what's going on. We welcome to our program UN Women's Representative for the Multi-Country Office Caribbean. That's Tony Ann Brodba. Did I have that correct? Tony Ann Brodba. And joining us as well via Zoom is Mrs. Sharon Harford. Welcome to both of you to our program here this morning. Nice to have you guys with us this morning. It's, as I said, it can be a touchy topic. It's something that we have to confront because we have evidence that it exists. And from a UN perspective, it's not just us alone. So I want to start with a question that may seem to have an obvious answer, but it may not necessarily be that in the minds of people. What constitutes violence against women?
I think I'll jump in, Sharon. This is Tony. Violence against women is defined in many ways, but the UN definition looks at some form of harmful, planned or unplanned, directed to another person, physical, sexual, emotional. There's also economic in terms of financial abuse. And this abuse is something that has a negative impact on the other person. When we speak about violence against women, we usually speak about it within a broader framework of gender-based violence. Mm-hmm. We use that because we're saying, what is the basis for this violence? What is motivating the violence? And similar to your former caller where you were talking about, is it the planning? Is it the road? What is it that leads to the manifestation of violence that women usually experience? That's why we call it gender-based. In the Caribbean, in the world, we note that there are perceptions about how women should be in relationships, and that is often what leads to violence that they experience at the hands of their partners. But then there are also experiences about whether men should have access to women's bodies easily, and that is how we see in terms of violence manifesting itself in terms of sexual violence and abuse, sexual harassment. And that's a little different than age-based violence, where you're looking at corporal punishment. So the power dynamic is different because of age. Mm-hmm. That's why we say violence against women and girls is a specific form of gender-based violence that often, at least this is what the data is telling us, affects women particularly because of our beliefs about how women should be and how men should be.
Do you think people are educated enough on what constitutes these different forms of violence? And I'll tell you why I'm asking the question. I've had the opportunity to deal with people who come from circumstances that believe certain types of behaviors are normal and that it's not a big deal and that I shouldn't worry about it. Everybody goes through these things, just chin up and move on. I've actually had instances where one young child came out of a home that violence was the way to solve everything. She believed that, and it was a she. Mm-hmm. She believed that was just normal. To see a husband and wife, a mother and father fighting violently was normal. Mm-hmm. And then you would take a child who came from a different background that never experienced these things, who would be appalled just to hear of what other people have been going through. So are we aware? I don't know if educated is the right term. Are we aware enough of the issues surrounding this thing called gender-based violence?
No, I don't think that we are. I think you hit the nail on the head. For a very long time, it was normalized. Mm-hmm. In the last CARICOM member state to legislate rape was in the 2000s, right? So there's certain forms of crime or there's certain forms of violence that we felt were normal. Violence in partnerships, in our homes, has been so normalized that when domestic violence legislation started to come about, there was a lot of pushback from our community that you're getting into people's business, right? We still see many countries in our region that marital rape is allowed because this is normal. So the work has to be done to, let's say, free ourselves from mental slavery, as Bob Marley would say. What do we want for ourselves and our communities? Because if you normalize violence in the home, why are we surprised that violence is being normalized in our communities? Your home is where everything is supposed to begin in terms of what you think should be. So if it is normal in the home, why not be violent in your community with your partners? And when I say partners, I don't mean your intimate partners, your friends. What the data shows in Trinidad and Tobago is that men who are more likely to be violent with their intimate partner at home are also more likely to be violent with other men outside of the home. So we need to start thinking a little bit more comprehensively about what is normal in our society and whether we want that to be what is normal.
Let's bring Mrs. Harford into the discussion. Mrs. Harford, Vice Chair of the Shelter for Battered Women and Children. Briefly tell us a bit about the shelter and tell us about some of the work that the shelter has been doing.
Okay, thank you very much for this opportunity. The shelter was opened in 1987 by Diana Mahabia Wyatt. And what we do is we have a process that we have to start with. People coming to the shelter, our clients, they have to come to the shelter through a recognized organization or professional. And this, understandably, is to protect those who are already in the shelter and our staff. Most of our residents come to us from 800 SAVE. Some may come from a professional, someone who's undergoing psychotherapy, maybe a school teacher. It could be a member of a religious order who is aware of what is going on. And we would then assess whether as or not this person is actually a victim of domestic violence. When a resident comes into us, we use the terms resident, we use the term client. It's a human being we're talking about. So labels, we try not to label people. The labels we want to use, however, are victims come to us and at least they leave us as survivors, but at best they leave us, what we aim for is thrivers. Our ladies come in within 48 hours. They are seen by a psychotherapist and a plan is made for each resident and their children if they have children, because my issue is not your issue. My situation is not your situation. One of the things that Tony mentioned that I would like to reinforce here is that the topic of rape, the topic of marital rape, we have found in most cases, most of our ladies don't understand that rape can take place in an intimate partner relationship that has been based on security and continuity, whether it is a legal relationship or not. We have an education program that is done hand in hand with our psychotherapists, with our social workers, where we first of all work on heart healing, and not physical heart healing, the emotions, the feeling of self-worth, so that no one who comes to our shelter ever leaves thinking they deserved what they got. Because that is a mindset, that is a cultural mindset, that you can come home from work on a Friday and your vex, your food isn't ready, so we slap her and tell her, get it on the pot quick. You know, we all know that that happens. For our ladies to be able to leave and to be safe as they can be, they have to be able to provide for themselves and for their children. So while we're working on psychological healing, we have to look at skill set training. If our ladies are working, we're putting into place now a system where we will have on shift 24 hours a day, we will have someone who has childcare experience so that our ladies can safely go to work. We provide them with transportation. We send our children to school. In most instances, we have to provide them with everything because it is not uncommon for our ladies and their children to come with absolutely nothing. In some instances, their legal documents have been destroyed. So what we do on an interview earlier by an error, I said what you would want for your wife. And I thought it afterwards very passing strange because so many times it is intimate partner violence that we have to deal with. But what we do is what you would want for your mom, what you would want for your sister, what you would want for your daughter, to make sure they never, ever have to believe they're someone's property to be treated however that person feels to treat them ever again. And it's a long process. It is a complicated situation. Everyone starts from a love relationship, whether it is a grandmother to a daughter, whether it is intimate partner. It all starts with love. Domestic violence is not a stranger walking up to someone and getting into a fight with them. So it starts with love. It becomes polluted. It becomes toxic. It becomes complicated. So we have to provide a complicated, holistic solution, which is very difficult. It is very expensive. And we have the staff, we have the training, we have the support of organizations like the UN who enable us to make sure that we improve everything that we do, every opportunity that we have for learning, we take advantage of it. But we need help. I would like to mention here now that we have had 3 shelters close down within the last, if I'm not mistaken, 3 to 5 years. Tony, you may have that information. I don't know if you do, but I think it's 3 shelters. It is 3 shelters within the last 3 to 5 years. They've all closed down because of financial constraints. So we do need the support of public and private sector for us to be able to continue.
Okay. The information sent in here says that on average, 46% of women have experienced at least one form of violence in their lifetime.
That is 100% accurate, unfortunately.
Yeah. This information, that's almost 50% you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's almost every mm-hmm. other woman. Is there a specific age? What does the data suggest? Does this happen at a certain time in your life, or can it happen at any point in time? Is there a group that we should be paying more attention to? What does the information suggest?
So the data says that's 46% is across the Caribbean. If you take the data that exists for the 5 countries that have prevalence data, in Trinidad and Tobago, it's 44%. And it is for women across their lifespan, 18 to 69. But what we need to think about is not so much when does it happen, but what are the risk factors for it happening? Women who are younger when they get into marriages or long-term unions are more at risk for finding themselves in positions of intimate partner violence. And that has a lot to do with the power dynamic. Usually you're much younger than the person that you end up in a relationship with. And that power dynamic makes you very dependent. And unfortunately, it doesn't have to happen, but there's certain dynamics that evolve as a result. They also have, as I noted earlier, men who are more likely to get into violent situations with other men are also more likely to be violent in their relationships. Men who have witnessed their mothers being abused are more likely to be in relationships that are violent. And women who have experienced corporal punishment are more likely to be in violent relationships, as well as women who have witnessed violence. All of that to say is that we need to do this work comprehensively. Sharon keeps speaking about the complicated approach, and that is why the European Union and the UN came together with government, the government of Trinidad and Tobago, and civil society to say we need a comprehensive approach. We need to get people from early childhood, people who may already be young adults, teenagers, young adults, and the elderly. Mm-hmm. And through this program, we have been able to do that, looking at whether it be through the Cleopatra Burrell Foundation, at least 45 caregivers of the elderly getting support to better understand what gender-based violence looks like, how they can prevent and respond effectively. Looking at the network of rural women producers who have worked with at least 1,000 young people so that they themselves have better skills to be able to manage conflict resolution. So the conflict is normal. That is going to happen in life. Conflict does not need to descend into violence. There are healthy ways in which we can manage conflict in relationships and in communities. And so getting at least 1,000 young people, that's the result of the Spotlight Initiative. And of course, working with all of the different UN agencies, of course it is one UN, but it is UNICEF, UNFPA, PAHO, WHO, UNDP and UN Women working collaboratively to really look at what works for Trinidad and Tobago, what the government is telling us, what civil society is telling us, and ensuring that funding is available through the EU and the UN to make sure that organizations like The Shelter get to do this great work. Organizations like CADV get to share their better practices with at least 18 other NGOs across Trinidad and Tobago, so that this is something that we're better prepared to manage.
What are some of the things, I don't want to say signs or signals, but what are some of the red flags that people should look for that would give... First, you need to know what to look for. Mm-hmm. And that's a discussion we've been having as to whether or not people are aware, to the people listening to us at home who may not necessarily be in the situation themselves but might know of someone who's in the situation. What do they look for?
What the data is telling us, and you can go to caribbean.unwomen.org and look at Caribbean Women Count, and you can see all of the data visually. It's really interesting. If you are in a controlling relationship, so the person wants to control your behavior, they want to control how much time you're spending with your family and your friends, they want to see what's on your phone, these are risk factors for a higher likelihood of those who experience violence in relationships. The other significant risk factor is frequent quarreling. As quarreling is something that's very common in relationships, but if you don't have the tools, again, effective, healthy tools for conflict management, everybody's stressed out. These situations we're talking about with the flooding happening, it is going to create a lot of stress in your relationship, in your household, in your community. How do you manage that stress effectively? That is something that they say we should also be looking out for. But I think the other thing is the internalized oppression, right? For women and men to start looking internally to say, what do I think is normal? It's the same thing as we started this conversation. What do I think is okay? Because women who believe that it is okay for a man to beat his wife are more likely to be in relationships where they are victims of violence. Men who also think it is okay and it is normal for violence to happen within a relationship are more likely to be perpetrators. So we have to do that internal work to think through, what do I want for myself, but also what do I want for my community and my children and my children's children to think is normal?
I think those are very, very... It's a deep, deep discussion. Just yesterday, I was having a discussion with someone, an elderly person, and the person was saying to me that in the early stages of their marriage, they've been married for 41 years. In the very early stages of their marriage, they went to their parents and told their parents of things that were taking place. And the individual was told, well, you have to stay right there because you can't embarrass the family by coming back home. But that was 40-something years ago. And
that still exists.
But that was the question I was coming to. How much of that still exists? Have we moved past that, Mrs. Harford?
No, we haven't. No, obviously, some people will grow and some people will become more aware of what is the right thing to do, because they can internalize it to a point to say, but what would I want done for my daughter? So there are people who will do that. But there is the old adage where it is, don't interfere between man and wife, don't interfere between man and woman. Or I don't want to say anything because next thing you know, he's pelting a stone through my window. So the days of us living, you remember the old days when it took a village to raise a child? I had friends that I had no issue with them correcting my children because I knew they weren't going to brutalize my children. And they would come and tell me what took place so that I would know what was happening with my children and be able to deal with it. But now you go to correct somebody's child. Look at what we read of in the papers. You go to correct, you want to, something happens with your child and a father is coming in to slap a child, somebody else's child. We have to go back to being human. We have to go back to being able to think that person is also my responsibility. That person is my neighbor. I need to care for them. Because the flip side of that coin is something happens to me. It's my neighbor who's going to hear me shout first. I don't want them to be avoiding me. So we have to think in terms of community. We have to become kinder. We have to become braver. Understand a lady coming out of her home with her children, running, breaking down a door, calling the police in the middle of the night and running for her life with her children. That is not a coward. That is a brave human being. And there is a point I would like to raise as well, is that domestic violence is like cancer. People seem to believe that it is only certain ethnic or only certain socioeconomic groups. There are groups where it is more prevalent, but please let it be known that domestic violence exists throughout every strata of our community. Financial, educational, social, however you want to have the divisions. So we need to look on. We need to, if we see something, we need to say something. You have the gender-based violence unit that they do a very, very good job. They are highly trained officers there. There's 1-800-SAVE. There's a CADV that Tony mentioned. No one can call a shelter directly. But if people see something, they have to say something, because we have to be responsible for our neighbor.
We've been speaking a lot about what to look for and how people find themselves in these situations. And the approach, and correct me if I'm wrong, is about trying to get the individual to be responsible, trying to change behavior so that people will understand what they find themselves in. And whether or not the situation that I'm in is one that I should remain in. And I know in discussions we've had previously on this, we've focused on men and men knowing what's right and what's wrong, what you can and what you cannot do based on your experiences. And what you experienced in the past should not necessarily dictate how you move forward, even though we can get away from that in some instances. Do we need a stronger response from the authorities? Because maybe would I be wrong to say that talking to some people will work, and some people need a stronger message that what you're doing is wrong? Are we up to date when it comes to laws and those things to protect women?
Tony, if you don't mind, I would like to actually, maybe not verbatim, but repeat what was said by Acting Superintendent Guy Allen, who is the head of the Special Victims Unit, on an interview this morning.
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. We have laws in place. No law is perfect. Laws are all written to protect the majority from the acts of the minority. However, the response to the law is something that needs to be looked upon. We have protective orders, and when our ladies come in, that's one of the things we say. Have you filed a protective order? Have you made a report? Would you like us to walk you through the stages of doing a protective order? These are all the things we do. And what I can quote Acting Superintendent Guy Allen by saying, not one single man has ever been fined for breaking a protection order in this country. Up to last year, there was a man who had broken the protective order 7 times. He has yet to pay a cent in a fine. He has yet to spend a night in jail. So if there is no consequence, no actual consequence, then the approach to changing behavioral patterns becomes even more complicated. Because if we don't have the finance to provide all of our clients and our residents with what we want to give them, how can we then spread and go to help potential or active abusers? How can we do that? So this has to be a joint holistic solution. Why are we getting protective orders if there's no consequence? And that's what, and we're telling people to do that when they come in. We're telling our ladies, the law is there. The law is there to protect you. The gender-based violence unit officers will go through that with them and tell them, speak to your social worker at the shelter. They will guide you through this, and we will be there to support you. If they go and they deliver the protective order and they go back out into the world, and the man goes after their family, The man may go after their grandmother or their mother and say, tell her to come back now or it's your turn.
Well, I just wanted to jump in on something quickly because I want to clarify. I don't think the responsibility is only with the individual who is being victimized. I think there are things that person can do that we've spoken to, but as Sharon was saying, there are things we all must do.
Right.
There is a program that is going to be restarted with the courts here in Trinidad and Tobago as well called RESET. And it is linked to a broader methodology called Partnership for Peace. We're looking at something that has worked for over 20 years in Grenada and other countries around the region. First-time intervention, first-time batterers who are before the magistracy, their rehabilitation just does not include incarceration. Their rehabilitation is a 16-week behavioral change program because the responsibility for violence is on the person who perpetrates the violence. They have to be accountable and they have to be able to accept that and change their behaviors. So when we're speaking, we started off with the individual, of course, because there's internalized oppression. There are decisions that we make in our lives that lead us to certain circumstances. But the decision maker who decides to perpetrate violence is the person accountable for the violence. And so we work at the individual level, we work at the institutional level. As Sharon was speaking, our institutions are working to strengthen themselves through the Spotlight Initiative and many other programs to better be able to respond. And we need it to happen as soon as possible. We are losing too many women who have protection orders. We also need the institution of the law to change and the institution of our culture to change. And then, of course, the ideologies. Why do people think it is okay to do this? Why do you think that you're in a position to own someone to the point that they want to leave you and you think you must leave this world because if you don't want to be with me, you should not exist? These are the things, and this is why Sharon keeps saying it's a complicated approach. It's a comprehensive approach that we must take at each level, working with survivors to become thrivers, victims, survivors, thrivers, as Sharon said, working with perpetrators and working with the services so that the services are there. Because the worst thing is to hear the lawyers for you and then you find yourself in a situation where you are not feeling as if justice has been served.
Mrs. Alford, I just wanted to ask a question. Based on what you said about the gender-based violence unit, this one individual breaching a protection order 7 times, and this information was relayed by the head of the gender-based violence unit, Guy Allen, correct?
That's right, yes. She's talking about the response of the judiciary. That's what she's talking about, yes, sir.
Because I think the obvious question would be, how does a situation exist where someone breaks the law 7 times and there are no repercussions for such? Because we've had instances where protection orders were granted and the person, they breached it once and the result was death. So to have a situation where I can't begin to imagine the trauma that this person must be going through, having to face a protection order breached 7 times already. And we've spoken about this on the program many, many times. And it's just about 12 minutes again before we wrap up. We need to take a couple messages. And when we get back, the phone lines are going to be open. If there are those of you listening into us who would like to join the discussion, feel free. 627-3223, 625-2257. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Join the chat now on the all-new Freedom on the all-new Talk Radio 106.5.
Welcome back. Just a couple minutes again. We continue our discussion. We're talking about violence, gender-based violence. This morning, I was having some pretty interesting discussions on that and on the trauma associated with what's going on. But I think we have a call. Let's see what this says. Hello, good morning.
Good morning, Satish.
Good morning to you.
And good morning to your guests. I'm calling from Princess Town. I just calling to express my support for your ladies and the organization in this question of gender violence. And really, Satish, it is like everything else in the country. It is very, very bad. It has reached a very, very high, dangerous proportions. And it's something I think we need the collaboration of the entire nation. And I just want to make one little suggestion to the ladies there. Perhaps sometime during the year, whether it's probably nearer to Mother's Day, when there's a lot of focus on women and mothers and so on, if they could target a sustained public awareness campaign, if it's for 1 week or 1 month, around that time, you know, have a good slogan, we love our mom, or respect your mom or woman or something, whatever, and get churches and schools and everybody involved, an island-wide campaign to raise that awareness and lift that awareness of motherhood, of or what it is to be a female, a woman, or a sister, whatever it is. That awareness, as we, you know, long ago, Satish, I could remember in years gone by, when women were respected. I mean, it was shameful to disrespect or whatever, what we see happening nowadays, passing as norms.
Our princess
were very, very embarrassing. Yes, and we have to bring back people to that awareness and see how we could treat with this question of gender-based violence. I want to support them and encourage them. And we must not give up this battle, but it is something, you know, work in progress. So I look forward to hearing. Perhaps, as again I said, look, have a sustained campaign for 1 month or a week. With get the media, get the chambers and the business people involved when, you know, they're having all this promotion for Mother's Day and so on, and factor in some little line that would lift our awareness and conscience. Thank you very much and keep up the good work.
Let's take another call because you're almost out of time. Hello, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling from Kukawa. While I want to agree with the two person you have here, two guests, I agree with that. But it should be on both sides of the fence, with men too. It have women who abuse men, but I find it does only talk about the woman side of it. But I personally think no man should hit no woman, and no woman should hit no man. I totally against violence. That is how I believe that it should be. I've never seen my father hit my mother. Yes, they have a little quarrel and all these sorts of things, but it's nothing that, oh, you would hit her and beat her and all them. No, that is wrong. I think nobody should do that at all, at all, at all. Because when the child see that, probably the child will grow up and probably do the same thing. So I totally against that, but I think it should be on both sides of the fence. As the good lady is speaking about it, could we just think about it about the side of the male person also? Thank you ever so much.
Oh, thank you so much for your call. We're almost out of time. I'm going to need your closing comments now.
Sure.
From both of you, actively involved in this and looking at it from all the sides that you can possibly look at it, for the people listening in to us, persons who may find themselves in these circumstances, may know of someone, what's your advice to them?
Tony, would you like to go first?
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, I was letting you go first. sure, I can go. I think the first thing is, my advice to them is, it is not your fault.
Mm-hmm.
There is support. You can access that support to get out of the situation and to rehabilitate yourself. And that is the most important message. I do want to say for the caller who was speaking about the violence against men, of course, I think violence is terrible, overtly. We should not perpetrate violence against women or against men. What our data is showing, though, is that the violence that is experienced in relationships is generally experienced by women. And that may also have to do with the fact that women are also a different size than men.
Mm-hmm.
One Trini police officer was pointing out to me, I've never seen a man come in for strangling in a relationship, you know, in IPV. You know, there are some men who come when they get hit. But there's certain forms of violence that, just because of the size, that happens more to women than it does to men. And of course, this is where we get to the gender base. There's certain things, as you're saying, the food not cook on time, the baby crying too long, that we expect women to do, that when they don't do it, their partners sometimes resort to violence. So in general, look, the help is there for both perpetrators, for men and for women who may be victims, to get to surviving and thriving. Mm-hmm. And I'll hand over to Sharon, because she's one of the solutions. She works with one of the solutions.
Thank you, Tony, and thank you so much for this opportunity. 1-800-SAVE, call 1-800-SAVE. This is your first step to freedom. Understand that if someone is asking for help, neighbors, take that little extra move. Help them, help their children. Healing is going to stop the cycle of violence, and we have to change our country, and we can do it one person at a time. Help is there. It's brave to ask for help. We're here to support you. 1-800-SAVE is through the Office of the Honourable Prime Minister, and they are the main resource for people seeking help and seeking safe shelter. And anyone out there who wishes to be able to support a shelter, it doesn't have to be our shelter, obviously. We are looking for support. But if you are willing to support and willing to go that extra mile, please pick up the phone and call. Please write a letter, write the media, talk to the children in your area. If there is a, I'm going to use your term, Tony, if there's a cohesive response, we can make a change. If you see something, say something.
And that's where we're going to drop the curtains on our interview here this morning. Thank you, ladies, very much for being with us. I know that on the station, we continue these discussions. Tomorrow morning on the show, for those of you listening, at 7:20 tomorrow, we have, as we continue focusing on 16 days of activism against gender-based violence, we'll have our guest Lawrence Arjun and a rep from UNICEF. The topic tomorrow morning is going to be protecting children from abuse. So once again, thank you both for being here with us this morning and sharing this information. Valuable. I do hope that whenever we have these interviews, I really do hope that the discussion can prompt someone somewhere somehow to get out of a situation or prevent them from being in that situation. Probably saving a life, protecting children, protecting young ones, ladies, wherever. That's the hope. That's why we have these discussions. So thank you once again for being with us here this morning.
Listen and stream the all-new talk radio, Freedom 106.5, for the only talk that matter.